Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It is the Lake Show. Henry is off all week. He'll return next Monday night between 6 and 9. Steve Thompson, Jonathan Lowe hanging out. Lots of football on this New Year's Eve. Lots of football on New Year's Day. And then, of course, Week 18 in the NFL, Vikes and Packers. By the way, injury report-wise, J.J. McCarthy limited, and I'm sure they'd love him to play, even though Green Bay can't go anywhere. They're in the playoffs. They're the seventh seed. We do know that. So they can't change their playoff fate at all. So I doubt Green Bay is going to play too many people. As a result, the Vikes are favored. But J.J. McCarthy, limited, they'd love to get him out there, get him some snaps before the end of the regular season. All right, Jonathan, college football playoff quarterfinals start tonight. 3 games tomorrow. We've had some bowl games, some Big Ten teams in action. Michigan was in action. Iowa's in action. Let's get those scores going right now. There it is.
Oh, that feels so good. That feels so good. Oh, I love it so much. Yes, it is usually during this time of the year, a little bit earlier in the year, I come on with this music and I say, it's a Saturday in the fall, y'all. College football here, there, and everywhere. Well, it's not a Saturday. It's not in the fall, but it is a wonderful time to end 2025. It's a New Year's Eve pigskin fest, y'all. College football in a couple nice places today. Let's start with what just happened. Oh, instant update from the Cotton Bowl. Miami has dominated this first half of play. They have just reached the half. Ohio State finally put a nice drive together and had a field goal attempt to close out the half. They missed the field goal. Miami runs into the half at Jerry World, AT&T Stadium, up 14-0 on the number 2 seed and defending national champions from Ohio State. Let's see what halftime adjustments are made. But Miami, their defense has ate up Ohio State's offensive line's lunch this first half. They have been all over quarterback Justin Sayin, not allowed a lot of big plays. One big play to Jeremiah Smith, but that was it. And the Hurricanes.
The next play, wasn't it a pick six?
Yes. It was a couple plays later. They had a big play to Jeremiah Smith, and then Miami got a sack and then got the pick six to go up 14. Wow. Now, remember, Miami's got the talent. They were ranked number 2 in the country earlier this season before they lost a couple of games. So they've got the talent to compete with Ohio State. You just wonder if Ohio State can make some changes, make some tweaks, come out in the second half, or if Miami's going to continue to be fairly dominant on defense. Let's go ahead.
Another thing I wanted to point out about this. Miami, in 6 quarters of playoff football, have given up 3 points.
Yes.
They beat A&M on the road 10-3.
Yes.
And now they're shutting out Ohio State at the break 14-0.
Dominance.
Amazing.
Holmes. That's dominance.
Yeah.
Let's head to some other bowl games from throughout the day. It was an SEC Big Ten showdown in Tampa, the ReliaQuest Bowl from Raymond James Stadium. Diego Pavia, a Heisman finalist, coming in. He sticks his chest out quite a bit. A lot of bravado. The Iowa defense was stifling in the first half. It was 14-3 at the half. Then Vanderbilt got things going. They started creating some offense. They started getting some points on the board, but it wasn't enough to catch up to the Hawkeyes. Hawkeyes get their offense going. Mark Gronowski was fantastic at quarterback for the Hawkeyes. Moulton had 95 yards rushing. And it was a 34-27 win for number 23 Iowa, beating number 14 Vanderbilt. Iowa gets to 9-4 on the season. the game of the day outside of the playoff was probably the Citrus Bowl at Camping World Stadium in Orlando. Number 13, Texas. Number 18, Michigan. Michigan had their defense working early, but it was kind of a back-and-forth affair, and Texas gets a lead late, pulls away a 60-yard touchdown run from Arch Manning to really close out the game, and the Longhorns defeat the Wolverines 41-27. In Paradise, Nevada, which is also known as Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Bowl from Allegiant Stadium, number 15, Utah, against Nebraska. Nebraska got out to an early lead. They got the first touchdown of the game. They had a 14-7 lead after one quarter, but then after that, it was all Utes. It was all Utes. 17-0 in the second quarter, 14-0 in the third quarter, and then basically an even fourth quarter. 44-22, Utah doubles up Nebraska. And by the way, without Kyle Whittingham, who was going to step down, but then took the job at Michigan, so they had a new head coach, an interim head coach, on the sideline earlier today for that game. The game of the day was a Sun Bowl out in El Paso.
Oh, yeah. It was a good game.
Duke and Arizona State went back and forth. It was a wild shootout showdown, basically on the Rio Grande, right across the border from Mexico. Duke ends up coming back, scoring late with under 3 minutes to go, I believe. They score. They get in the end zone. They take down the Sun Devils 42-39. I just want to see real quick some of the stats of this game because they were ridiculous. You had Jeff Sims for Arizona State, 27-38, 375 yards passing, 70 yards rushing, 5 total touchdowns.
Wow.
And then there was Darian Mensah, 29-51, 327 yards, 4 touchdowns. The rushing goal of the day went to Nate Shepard of Duke, 22 rushes, 170 yards, and a touchdown. Just ridiculous numbers all over the place at this Sun Bowl. That doesn't even count the receiving numbers. Now, real quick, 3 games tomorrow, all playoff games. Number 4 Texas Tech against number 5 Oregon kicks it off at the Orange Bowl in Miami. In the mid-afternoon, it'll be the Rose Bowl in Los Angeles. Number 1 Indiana, undefeated team, only undefeated team left in FBS, taking on the brand in college football. Number 9, Alabama. And then at the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, it is going to be an all-SEC matchup. Number 3 Georgia against number 6 Ole Miss tomorrow night. 3 big games, 3 huge games on this college football New Year's Day tomorrow with this playoff in full swing with the Cotton Bowl getting underway tonight.
We brought it up earlier. I would be thrilled if after the games tomorrow, the semifinals were Texas Tech against Indiana and Ole Miss against Miami. I'd love that. And I think it would be great for the playoff.
That would be your first headline of 2026. Your first big story of 2026 where you have established teams. Because right now, Miami is a historic brand, but it's been a while since they've been this good. So you've got Miami coming back around, Indiana coming out of nowhere, Texas Tech coming out of nowhere, and Ole Miss this good for the first time again, probably in 60, 65 years, taking on established modern programs in Oregon, Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia.
Yeah.
How many of the big boys win? How many of the upstarts win?
Yeah, even if a couple, if Miami hangs on to win tonight, I think that would be a good thing. And it's not that, you know, I have a lot of great Ohio State hatred. It would just be fun to see a 10 seed because there's a lot of people ripping this format. We're Notre Dame, and, you know, how come they didn't get in? And, you know, some of these smaller programs that got in that, you know, aren't part of the Power Five and, you know, a lot of complaining. I would like to see some new blood make a push and someone win it all that, you know, doesn't come out of that group of the big money, the established programs. And like you say, you know, Kalen DeBoer, I called his games when he was a college football player at Sioux Falls College. He's a South Dakota guy. So, you know, Kalen DeBoer, you know, good guy, just happens to coach Alabama. But it would be nice to see the likes of Indiana, Texas Tech, Ole Miss, and Miami advance to the semifinals. Hey, did want to get into a little bit of NFL as we go into Week 18. We already mentioned J.J. McCarthy, limited today in practice. Still a ways to go as they get ready for their Sunday tilt with Green Bay. Green Bay, they're locked into the seventh seed. They aren't going really anywhere. Some games of intrigue, though. And these are the two games that stand out to me and should stand out to everyone. And that's the Saturday night tilt. Seahawks 49ers, Levi's Stadium, Santa Clara, California. That'll be the site of the big game in February, and that is kind of a winner-take-all affair there between Seattle and San Francisco. That's pretty good stuff. That's a terrific Saturday night game.
Well, you think about this. If San Francisco wins this game, they get a bye. They don't have to play next weekend during wild card weekend. They would host the divisional round. If they win that, they would host the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
And if they win that, they would play in their home stadium, in their basically sleep in their own beds. I know they probably can't because they don't do that in the NFL. I don't think the two teams that have played in their home stadiums have done that. But technically, they could sleep in their own beds and play in their home stadium in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That hasn't really happened a lot. It's a recent phenomenon. But if that does happen, whether San Francisco wins Saturday night or not, if they make it to the Super Bowl, that's going to be the third team to play in their home stadium in a Super Bowl in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and you're right. That is ridiculous. I still think Seattle, if they can find a way to get it done and beat the 49ers, I don't think anybody in the NFC wants to go play in Seattle. With all due respect to Levi's Stadium, and I'm sure, you know, the Niners have a home field advantage, but that Seattle home field advantage is another level, and that is a very intriguing game. And the other scenarios are pretty straightforward in the NFC. Carolina can clinch the NFC South Division title with a win or tie or an Atlanta win. Tampa Bay can clinch the NFC South with a Tampa Bay win plus an Atlanta loss or tie. Otherwise, things pretty buttoned up in the NFC as far as the teams go. There's no drama on who's in. Seattle, Chicago, Philly, Carolina, San Francisco, the LA Rams, and Green Bay are in. And then over in the AFC, well, Sunday Night Football, Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I'm also looking forward to this because that is such a terrific rivalry. And you got the Aaron Rodgers storyline and Baltimore and Lamar Jackson and all those injuries and the dreadful start and so on and so forth. I really look forward to that. And what could play out there?
And the thing is, I had a feeling if it came down to it that they would put Pittsburgh, Baltimore in that spot if the NFC South, or if that division wasn't settled. If the NFC South was up for grabs and Pittsburgh had won in Cleveland last Sunday, then you probably would have had Carolina and Tampa as the final game. And at that point you would have known, because Atlanta, well, I guess you couldn't have. You probably would have had Seattle, San Francisco, because
I bet that would have been the Sunday night game for
because
sure.
The thing is, now, Tampa, doesn't hold the control in their own hands. They need help even if they win. And so if they had that Sunday night and you had Atlanta Sunday afternoon, you might know who's won the division by the time that game gets underway. And then all your juice.
Well, and here's the thing. With Pittsburgh and Baltimore, what's great about it is it's kind of a winner take all. Now, Pittsburgh would clinch the AFC North with a win or a tie. Baltimore's got to win straight up to win the division. But when Baltimore was struggling early, that was one of those teams, and I certainly wasn't alone. Don't count them out. Don't count out the Ravens, and here they have that chance. So a couple of games Saturday night and Sunday night that are intriguing as well. And there's some seeding up for play, and we're not going to go down that rabbit hole for the most part, but a couple of really good NFL games this weekend. I do want to get back to college football in a moment. And a huge Texas Tech booster, billionaire oil man, laid out something that we're going to present to you. And I think this is really interesting on the turmoil in big-time college sports, particularly college football right now. And he laid out a scenario. And you know what? You read it, and I may not agree with it, but it is definitely going in this direction. We'll get into that in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
There's a lot of hand-wringing about big-time college athletics, and you have the revenue now, some of the revenue flowing to the players, name, image, likeness. You've got the transfer portal. In some ways, it is chaos year to year in big-time college football. Men's and women's hoops. I think you're starting to see this in other sports as well at the collegiate level. And it is chaotic. But a guy who is a huge booster of Texas Tech, get this, he's a billionaire, chairman of the Texas Tech Board of Regents, and the school's number one super fan, Cody Campbell, was quoted as saying in the same piece story, "For Texas Tech, the best thing that could happen is the whole thing continues to be chaotic. You got a billionaire booster who's willing to throw in limited funds. They take on Oregon tomorrow in one quarterfinal in the college football playoff. You got Phil Knight, of course, Nike fame, backing Oregon, etc. You know, billionaire benefactors, and it helps these programs." But in this article from the AP, he says what college football needs to do is it needs some help from Congress to get rid of a law that limits the collective bargaining power, if you will, of the conferences. SEC has a deal. Big Ten has a deal. The other conferences have their own television revenue deals, if you will. And what he's arguing is he's saying college football would be better if they got together as a group and packaged the entire thing together like the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball, etc., do with their media rights. And the NFL, of course, is the big guy on the block, billions of dollars in television revenue. And in this article, Campbell argues that they could be leaving $6-7 billion on the table, that if they could get some relief from Congress and then create an entity to manage this. And Jonathan, I don't think he's wrong that we are headed in this direction. And I'll tell you why. Because television is playing big bucks right now and would be willing to pay more, but they want more week in, week out attractive matchups. They don't necessarily, NBC on a Saturday night doesn't want Rutgers at Purdue. You know what I'm saying? They want Penn State, Ohio State. They want Michigan. They want Alabama. They want Georgia. Television wants the spotlight programs. And I think if the SEC and the Big Ten and all the other conferences and all these other big schools got together and came up with a collective television package, I think he's right. I think they could generate more money that way. But then again, how do you appease television? And, you know, is there a great deal of national interest in Minnesota and Michigan State on a given Saturday?
So this has been a big conversation piece probably for at least the last decade and a half. It's probably gone on longer than this, but with the realignments in 2010 and 2011 and 2012, when basically the Big 12 was the feeder system for the other conferences, where you had Colorado go to the Pac-10 that became the Pac-12. You had Nebraska go to the Big 10. Missouri and Texas A&M went to the SEC. And at that time, people were wondering, okay, the Big 12 is
in trouble.
Yeah, they're going to be just picked clean. The carcass is going to be picked clean. And
what used to be the Pac-10, well, what's that now?
Yes. And some people might say it went back maybe to the 90s when Arkansas and South Carolina joined the SEC and ballooned that conference. But I think over the last 15 years, it's really come into favor. Okay, why don't we just do another split in college football and have, instead of FBS and FCS, you have a Division 1A, a Division 1 AA, and a Division 1 AAA. Yeah. So now you've got the teams that are at FCS, they're going to be the third tier of Division 1. The mid-majors, and again, you can define whatever you consider a mid-major, those are going to be the second tier division. And then you have the biggest schools, whether it's 32 or 40 or 60, 64-ish, that amount of schools, that's going to be your top tier. And that would make it more attractive to do something collective, because you could take West Coast teams like UCLA and USC and Washington and Oregon. You could take Northern teams like Iowa, and would Wisconsin be on the cutting line? Would Minnesota be on the cut line? Nebraska would probably make it in. Michigan definitely would. Northwestern would probably be out. Illinois, maybe not.
But your point is exactly what they did in high school football, in my opinion, here in Minnesota. And it's not to diminish that, but you have 6A, 32 of the biggest schools playing 6A football, and then you got 5A, 4A on down the line and plenty of opportunities. But here's the change, that for scheduling, there's no longer the Lake Conference of the Northwest Suburban or the Suburban East or the South Suburban. It's by districts. And if you did go to that, I just think that for television stay, and for maximizing that revenue that Mr. Campbell talked about in this AP story, is that you have to give television, it's like, all right, here's the 64 teams that are in this group, and you have it regionalized. You know, this idea that Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA are in the Big Ten is preposterous. For football's sake, anyway, they should be playing a regional schedule or a division schedule and some crossover games like they do in the NFL. And I am convinced that's the way it's going. I'm convinced that's the way it's going.
Well, here's the other thing with this, and you brought up a good point. I've talked about this with a good buddy of mine. He is of the opinion that college football will, in some way, shape, or form in the near future, break away from the collegiate mold and break away from the collegiate form of the NCAA and become its own entity. And then that leaves all the other sports, you know, basketball probably would still follow with this. So basketball, hockey, tennis, golf, soccer, volleyball, all the other sports would go back to what they had before in those conferences. The Pac-12 would reform, or the Pac-10 would reform.
And it makes so much sense, geography. And I think about when my daughter went to Arizona in the old days of the Pac-10 or whatever it was called. I think it was still the Pac-10. But you had Arizona and Arizona State. You had USC and UCLA. And then in Northern California, you had Stanford and Cal, and Oregon State, Washington and Washington State. And then eventually Utah and Colorado, you know, joined the fold. But you had traveling partners. And for a lot of these sports, you know, you'd go to LA for the weekend and play volleyball against USC and then UCLA or hoops or whatever. And it made sense, and geographically it made sense. Football is a different animal and, you know, generates that revenue. And I think there is something in that, and I really feel like we're moving in that direction.
So,
and ultimately television is going to dictate that.
So this was something I thought of years ago. I thought of this decades ago, actually.
Yeah.
And it's on the same level of that separation of college football from college itself. If you made college football into a minor league system, if you made it into AAA, AA, single A, and you could have an affiliation with a school in that area, but let's say the Cleveland Browns have Ohio State as their AAA affiliate, and maybe you have Miami of Ohio or Bowling Green or Toledo as your AA affiliate. You know, Michigan has, or Detroit has the University of Michigan as their AAA affiliate. And Michigan, I know this would sting a lot of Spartans. Michigan State, maybe your AA? Or if Michigan State balks at it,
Sparty wouldn't like that.
No, they wouldn't. But maybe you go Western or Central or Eastern or something like that. You break it off again from the colleges in the fact that it's a separate business thing that maybe the NFL runs, and maybe they share the profits with the colleges instead of having the colleges have to schedule and put in the money for all the recruiting, the travel, all of this, and take some of the burden out of the schools, and then they can focus more on all the other sports.
Yeah, I think it's getting back to Cody Campbell, the billionaire booster at Texas Tech. So some interesting concepts in all of it, but clearly what's going on right now has got to change. We've got to take a break. We're late to the weather. We'll get you up to date on that. What does it look like on New Year's Day? And then you know, things are going to quiet down, and we'll have some mild weather here in early January. We'll get into that in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It is the Lake Show. Henry has the night off. He'll be back Monday night to start the new year between 6 and 9. Steve Thompson along with Jonathan Lowe. We have a scoreboard update at the Cotton Bowl, quarterfinal number one, college football playoff. Ohio State back in the game.
That's right. They did drive down the field. It looks like Bo Jackson. No, not that Bo Jackson. The new Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson. I can't call him Bo Jackson 2.0. There's no way that this kid, as great as he probably is, there's no way he's Bo Jackson. The Bo Jackson of the 80s and 90s. He's not Bo Jackson 2.0. He's just the new Bo Jackson. He crossed the goal line on third and goal, and Ohio State now has cut the lead in, or the deficit in half. They are down 14-7 with about 8 minutes to go in the third quarter. So Miami gets a chance to get the ball back, see what they do, and they, if they can drive the ball down the field and extend their lead once again.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the name, because I immediately thought of how great Bo Jackson was. Football player, baseball player. I remember that home run he hit in the All-Star game. What an athlete, Bo Jackson. You know, you got Deion Sanders, had a phenomenal athletic career, major leagues, NFL, etc. For my money, though, I don't know if it gets any better than Bo Jackson.
And the fact that he was in Kansas City for the first part of his baseball career, he's still a worshipped figure. In KC.
Well, yeah, you remember his college days and as a pro, and that is, he is one of the ultimate, you know, what if, you know, as far as injuries go, when it comes to Bo Jackson. Boy, what a talent that is, for sure. Back to college sports, and we did get a text or two. And I think anybody who loves college football, and I am a football fan, high school football, college football, small college football, all the way up to the NFL. But you do not have to realize that where we're at is unsustainable. And the arms race. We did get a text, and it talked about the money. And how many of these athletic programs around the country are in the red? And the texter threw out a number, 80%. I don't know how many programs there are. I don't have the data in front of me. But the texter seemed pretty credible and pretty reliable, that I would assume the vast majority of these athletic programs around the country, I don't care if it's Minnesota or Iowa or Rutgers or whatever, and I'm talking Division I, are not struggling with money. And the endless push to build new facilities and so on and so forth, I'm surprised we haven't heard yet that it's time to replace Williams Arena. You know, that we need a new barn at the University of Minnesota, that we can't compete. And by the way, I tend to believe that, but you look at all the money that's been pumped into those facilities, and now all the money needed to just stay somewhat competitive in the Big Ten. And in reality, the game at Ohio State, even the game down in Iowa, or the game out in Oregon, they weren't competitive. And when you boil it down to that, in a big school, land-grant institution like the University of Minnesota, wonderful institution, a lot going for it, but in a very crowded sports marketplace like the Twin Cities, where you have the Vikings, the Twins, the Timberwolves, the Wild, the Lynx, the Loons, the Frost, etc., etc., all competing for those corporate dollars, the sweet money, the advertising, etc. Wow. And then you're going up against the likes of Ohio State and Michigan, and a lot of these schools. We mentioned Texas Tech. They got a billionaire oil man. I remember Oklahoma State when T. Boone Pickens was pumping a lot of money into that thing. You know, it's almost like you better have a billionaire benefactor or you aren't going to be able to hang in there. And I think that's what's got to change. But what you're kind of like herding cats right now, Jonathan. And I don't know if you're going to be able to get college presidents and conferences and athletic directors and then all the boosters that feed these programs to agree on anything. That's what's so scary about it. And then what's the end game? Where schools start throwing up their hands and just say, we can't compete anymore. There's no reason for us to bother fielding a football team. That's my worry, that you're going to start seeing programs start to fold. That we just can't run. It's a money loser.
Well,
I think it could get to that because I think there's a river of red ink flowing through these schools.
Well, it's been happening for a while. It's just that it wouldn't happen on the scale that I think you're suggesting, because I keep forgetting this. There was when college football was celebrating its 150th anniversary, ESPN did those specials on all different facets of the history of college football in this country. And one thing they talked about was integration, and they talked about head coaches. And the first major head coach at a quote-unquote major PWI, Power White Institution, was, I believe, Willie Jeffries was his name, out of Wichita State. And you're saying, Wichita State? Wichita State had a football program back, I think it was the early 90s, or the 80s, that he was the head coach. Mm-hmm. Wichita State doesn't have football anymore. You have teams that are big-time college basketball programs, Georgetown, Villanova, any one of those in the Big East, where they either have no football program or they play a level down. They play on the lower tier, quote-unquote, of Division I at FCS.
Yeah.
And so
I think you're going to see more schools.
Yeah.
It's 80, 85-plus coaches plus travel in the expense of associated putting a football team out there just to take a beating week in and week out. It's kind of like, and we're bleeding red ink. That's the thing. And ultimately, it is going to come down to the money. And it's just kind of like, how can Mark Coyle and the University of Minnesota with a straight face say, well, we're running another $15 million deficit this year, but, you know, we got to, you know, give the defensive coordinator $1.5 million a year. And, oh, by the way, we got to give P.J. Fleck another bump or we're going to lose him. You know, it starts to become, what are we doing here?
So this is probably the more extreme thing. Two programs in the same conference with the same quote-unquote name, one a university, one a college. This was out of the Northeast Conference. St. Francis College out of Brooklyn completely eliminated their entire Division I athletic program 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, March of 23. St. Francis University in Pennsylvania, they announced about 9 months ago, March of 25, that they would reclassify from Division I, all their sports, to Division III. And that's without football. Neither of those programs had, I believe, any sort of football program. So now you're talking about reclassifying and, again, elimination without the stressors of big-time football on it. It's you don't know where it's going to head, but it's not like it hasn't been happening. It's just how high does that reach?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think Big Ten or SEC schools are going to go away anytime soon. But it's starting to move so far away what I think of college athletics is. Even Rick Pitino, who isn't a moral beacon, in my opinion, of anything, has said, let's face it, it's pro sports. You know, big-time hoops, even for the women, big-time hoops, women, men, football. In reality, it is pro sports. And are we now to the point where it has very little to do with college and really is about, you know, paying players and getting butts in seats and signing television contracts? It is craziness here at the end of 2025. I don't think what we're doing right now is sustainable over the long haul, for sure. It is 8 minutes now in front of 9 o'clock. Quick break. We'll come back. Some of the day's sports headlines. We'll have another college football scoreboard update. Brutal day for the Timberwolves in Atlanta. Wild get a point in San Jose. We'll get into that in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. We got to run. Happy New Year. Big thanks to Jonathan Lowe. Big thanks to you for tuning in. Miami leads Ohio State now 17-7 late third quarter. Timberwolves get thumped in Atlanta, 126-102. Wild get a point. They lose to the Sharks 4-3 in a shootout. We got the news and weather in a moment.